Felita Brown is here, and this month we're going to talk about...
We're going to talk about a poet named Robin Becker and her new book. Her new book is called Tiger Heron. There's a picture of one on the cover. It's just a gorgeous bird in the tall grasses. This heron lives mostly in South America and Mexico, not this far north. There's a poem in the book set in Costa Rica that has a tiger heron in it, but all the poems in this collection have the variegation and the quality of tiger in their intense attention to whatever life is presenting at the time. The poems are rich with life. They look straight ahead and see a life energy at work even within all sorts of trouble, both ecological and personal. You can't miss death with a capital D in this collection. It includes poems about her parents' last years, the death of friends, of relationships, as well as of coral reefs. Here's an example of a poem with a lot of creatures in it, but you see as you hear it how the human is embedded in the natural world. There's no punctuation, so it moves on and on in short, staggered, three-line stanzas. It's called Late June Owl. They say it's a bad summer for ticks, a good summer for daylilies. And then this part is in parentheses. Quality control likes to measure and evaluate with continuous monitoring. They say my friend has a few weeks, maybe a month, but you never know. As the raptor people know how to keep the orphaned screech owl before release, may his keepers open the airy nets of their patience when he tries them. They say the screech owl's trill has more than 4 individual calls per second. They say they can barely hear his voice, more like wind than words. They say the owlet will leave the open cage when fully flighted and capable of hunting. They say the dying will sometimes wait until everyone has left the room. Isn't that a stunning poem with its understatement? The book has 3 sections, each taking on the subject of death in the middle of lots of life. Here's one from the second section. It's called And So Forth. In the last years of his life, my father concluded every sentence, and so forth. 3-syllable glaze, the phrase pervade the sweet aftertaste of icing, a hopeful sufficiency. I went to the doctor and so forth. I picture him coming about, a sail tightening to the wind in a graceful arc, the whole boat of him forthwith gliding. Never one for details, he'd body forth with his spasm of sonnets, and so forth, shellacking particulars. No solvent loosened names or dates, and my mother died before she chose laziness or cognitive loss. No matter. Let others blather on with unnecessary hype. My father made do with his small class of words. Conjunctions fortified him, lent him Congress and congregation, as in, I had lunch with the boys and so forth. To which I, blabbermouth daughter, amend a buoyancy of pastrami and coleslaw. I hear so much wonderful music in this poem. The 3-syllable glaze, the phrase pervade, for example. Mostly, I think it's Becker's wit and sharp eye that keeps me with her, and her good heart that wins out. Here's one I like from the last section of the book. It's called The Dog I Didn't Want. And the title is actually the first line of the poem. The dog I didn't want ran in anxious circles around the room, stacked crates of dogs in need of homes. I drifted toward a puppy, nonchalant. The assistant said he hadn't yet been fixed and returned the dog I didn't want to his cage. An older couple, looking to assuage a recent loss, sat with a spaniel transfixed. The dog I didn't want yipped and cried in his metal pen. Take him for a walk, the keeper called, gave me a leash. Outside, he stalked the mailbox post and tugged to come inside. He wouldn't meet my gaze or lick my hand or charm with any doggy gifts. Instead, the dog I didn't want curled up and tucked his head into the coiled spiral of his body, color of sand. Quiet, eyes closed, snout down, he awaited his fate like one bound for the gallows or the chair. Resigned, unloved, the dog I didn't want, in his despair, won me his small estate. We might not notice at first the complicated rhyming pattern in this poem or its iambics, resigned, unloved, the dog I didn't want, for example. But that repetition of sound and the regular rhythm elevates this poem to a kind of dignity of loss and acceptance. At the end, the dog is winning for her his small estate. She's inheriting an estate from him, not the other way around. One last poem that points most poignantly to the deep subject of these poems, which seems to be loss and what we do with it. This poem actually shows up early in the book, but I wanted to save it for last because it seems to encapsulate the tone of the collection. Not a sadness, but shall I call it a joy, even in the smallest bit of energy that can show up in life, at the edge of life. This poem is a sestina with its many repeated lines and its only two rhymes repeated throughout. It's called Modern Death. "You'll miss me and I'll miss you. Let me sleep," she said. I badgered the corridors, begging advice. Father watched TV vigorously by her bed. Nurses urged paper cups of colored meds, but she took only painkillers they spliced. "You'll miss me and I'll miss you. Let me sleep," she said, and drifted off. I panicked in the dreadful state of Florida at death's imprecise approach. Father watched TV vigorously by her bed, while I questioned strangers, bring her home instead? No, Father wept when I spoke of hospice. "You'll miss me and I'll miss you. Let me sleep," she said. The failure of the pacemaker led to technicians disconnecting the device. Father watched TV vigorously by her bed. "Why am I alive when I want to be dead?" my mother moaned, articulate, concise. "You'll miss me and I'll miss you. Let me sleep," she said. Father watched TV vigorously by her bed. Isn't that an amazing poem?
Absolutely.
The dying mother who's stronger than the daughter, the father who doesn't know what else to do but watch TV, and that wonder, I don't know, that wonderful word vigorously. I can remember sitting in rooms where someone's dying and there's that kind of vigorous, you know, you have to stay plastered to the TV because it's all you can do. I know just how she... what she means there. And the poem, the tightness, the form of the control, the form of the poem is so tight in its control, the way it matches the tension of the situation. Robin Becker is a liberal arts research professor of English and women's studies at Pennsylvania State University. She's written 7 poetry collections. She's won many awards and has been the Penn State laureate. She edits and writes for the Women's Review of Books. The poet is Robin Becker, and the poem is Tiger Heron from the University of Pittsburgh Press.
Thank you, Fleta.